Blog Talk Radio.
All right, Lenny, buckle up. It's showtime.
You are the worst person I know. I think what I hate most about you is your textbook liberal agenda, how we should legalize pot, man, how big business is crushing the underclass, how homelessness is the biggest tragedy in America. Well, what have you done to help? I work down at the soup kitchen. Never seen you down there. You want to help? Grab a ladle. And by the way, driving a Prius doesn't make you Jesus Christ. Oh, wait, you don't believe in Jesus Christ, or any religion for that matter, because religion is for idiots. Well, who the hell are you to talk down to anyone? But you know what? I can forgive all of that, all of it, if you weren't such a bore. That's the worst of it. You're just a big, sad bore.
And welcome to the show, folks. It is 1 minute after the hour, of course, right here on Reese on the Radio on blogradio.com. It is 8/8/2012, August the 8th, 2012. Okay, no birthdays to celebrate today because I don't think I know anybody with a birthday on the 8th of August. I don't. I have no idea. But I'd like to get into later on about somebody who I think I'm going to have to retract my earlier statements. Somebody get Janet Jackson back in Paris Jackson's life. But I'll talk about that later. I just heard some disturbing news, and somebody needs to get reckless-ass Janet back in Paris's life. I was wrong, Janet. I was wrong. I was so wrong about you, Janet. Janet, I will give you a formal apology in the 9 o'clock hour. Somebody needs to get back into the life of Paris Jackson, and it has to be you. Your strong hand needs to be in that, but then we'll get into other stuff. We'll get into other stuff first. Hopefully JC will be up here soon. He's having some issues online, but hopefully he'll get here. Now, everyone is talking about the politics of personal destruction today. And although I mentioned it yesterday, now this story has gone into fever pitch mode. Because now that there's been some investigation into this, the Obama administration is really, really looking horrible. And folks, I have the tapes to prove it. And this all surrounds Joe Sopcich, the gentleman in the Priorities USA ad. I've got tapes that you're going to hear of Joe Sopcich telling this story a long time ago. And although the Obama administration is saying that they know nothing about it, that they don't know the background to this story, it turns out they're lying. And there's proof. And we will play it today. There is proof. Now, there are two key names you need to remember here, folks. And that is not just Joe Sopcich, Stephanie Cutter, the deputy campaign manager for the Obama administration. Now, the ties to this are endless. See, the super PAC is not supposed to have any association with the Obama administration. It's illegal for them to have any association with them politically. In other words, the super PAC can, of course, you know, they can stump for them. They can do political ads for them. But the White House and the super PAC cannot coordinate attacks against Mitt Romney. So, I'm sure everybody knows that. I don't need to explain it, but I figured I will. For anybody out there living under a rock who doesn't understand how this works, I'll explain it. So, here's the deal. Now, the first shoe dropped on this, when CNN and Wolf Blitzer had an odd case of journalism, a very odd case of journalism, that happened today, well, yesterday. And the breakdown went a little something like this from the folks over at CNN, lowest rated cable news channel in the country, so probably no one saw it. But here's Wolf Blitzer and what his reporters found out.
The attack ad by a super PAC backing President Obama basically blames Mitt Romney for a woman's death from cancer after his company, Bain Capital, shut down the steel mill where the woman's husband worked. Let's go to our White House correspondent, Brianna Keeler. She's watching the story for us. Brianna, on the surface, it seems pretty outrageous to blame Mitt Romney for the death of this woman. That's a pretty outrageous claim, but what's going on here?
It does when you dig deeper here, Wolf, because this ad makes it sound like this woman passed away shortly after Bain Capital closed down the steel plant where her husband worked. But in reality, she passed away 5 years after it closed. And the former steel worker in this ad, I spoke to him on the phone today, and he said that during some of that time, his wife had insurance through her employer. So, Wolf, this is a heart-wrenching story, but it's not accurate. Joe Sopcich worked at GST Steel in Missouri for almost 30 years. He was laid off after Bain Capital acquired the plant, eventually closing it down. Now, Sopcich is featured in a new ad by Priorities USA Action, the super PAC supporting President Obama's re-election.
When Mitt Romney and Bain closed the plant, I lost my health care. And my family lost their health care. And a short time after that, my wife became ill, and then I took her up to the Jackson County Hospital and admitted her for pneumonia, and that's when they found the cancer. And by then, it was stage four. It was just, there was nothing they could do for her.
It's a heartbreaking story, but the ad does not tell all of it. In 1999, Mitt Romney leaves Bain for the Salt Lake Olympics, stopping day-to-day oversight of the company, but remaining CEO. In 2001, Joe Sopcich loses his job when Bain closes the plant. His wife still has insurance, though, from her employer, Savers Thrift Store. A year later, Romney formally leaves Bain. And it's that year, 2002, or perhaps 2003, Sopcich tells CNN, that his wife leaves her job because of an injury. That's when she became uninsured, without fallback insurance from her husband. A few years later, in 2006, she goes to the hospital, is diagnosed with cancer, and dies just days later. Sopcich, an Obama supporter who has appeared in another ad back in May for the Obama campaign, blames Romney for the loss of his job and his insurance.
That's the way that I feel. I mean, he has, Mitt Romney, he's a very rich man. I mean, it's obvious if you watch him on television that he's completely out of touch with the average family, or, you know, middle-income people. I don't think he has any concept as to how, when you close a big company like that, how it affects families, the community, you know, it affects everyone.
The Romney campaign is blasting the ad, a spokeswoman saying President Obama's allies continue to use discredited and dishonest attacks in a contemptible effort to conceal the administration's deplorable economic record. The Obama campaign and the White House are keeping their distance from the debate. White House Press Secretary Jay Carney said he has yet to see the ad.
I'm simply saying that I have not seen this, so how could I possibly assess it?
But you can. Will you assess it later?
If you ask me tomorrow.
Now, Wolf, I followed up with Carney after the briefing, and he told me that he may look at the ad, but if I ask about it, quote, my assessment will be I have no assessment. This is kind of a case of a super PAC being able to do the dirty work and the campaign and the candidate, and in this case, the White House, trying to keep its hands clean.
So, now I just want to make sure that I make this abundantly clear. Jay Carney says that he has not assessed the ad. He knows nothing about it. But here's this key part. In Brianna's report on CNN, she said that Joe Sopcich appeared in a May ad put out by the Obama administration. And it's an online ad that you can see on Obama's website. So they know who Joe Sopcich is. Now, let's go one step deeper. One step deeper. I already mentioned.
Does this ish get any deeper?
Oh, it gets deeper.
Do I need to put my boots on?
Yes, you do. Trust me, you got to put on your tall boots. Because check this out. This is a conference call. Now, remember, this is a conference call. No, sorry, I won't play the conference call yet. Sorry. This is Stephanie Cutter this morning. I watched it, okay? I watched it this morning. Stephanie Cutter, deputy campaign manager, was on CNN's Starting Point this
Deputy
morning.
Deputy campaign manager to Barack Obama.
That's right. Deputy campaign manager to Barack Obama. Blonde chick, you've seen her a lot.
This Which is hired by Barack Obama.
She's on Barack Obama's campaign.
Payroll, yes.
That's right. Okay. This is her this morning when asked about the ad.
Plenty of questions about the timeline of this man, and obviously we are sorry he lost his wife. You know, he's suggesting that she died because of an action that Mitt Romney took. He, of course, had left Bain years before this you know, the Bain took over this company, and then his wife died years
true.
After. I mean, what's going on?
Yeah.
Is this ad accurate?
Well, here are the facts. See, I don't know the facts about when Mr. Sopcich's wife got sick or the facts about his health insurance, but here's what I do know.
Hear what she said?
She knows nothing.
She says, I don't know the facts about Joe Sopcich. I don't know the facts about Joe Sopcich or when his wife got sick. Well, it turns out Stephanie's lying. This is Joe Sopcich on a conference call.
With Stephanie.
With Stephanie Cutter.
Wow.
After we lost our jobs, we found out that we were going to lose our health insurance and that our pensions hadn't been funded like Bain promised they would be. I was lucky to find another job as a custodian in a local school district. They gave me some health insurance, but I couldn't afford to buy it for my wife. A little while later, she was diagnosed with lung cancer. I had to put her in a county hospital because she didn't have health care. And when the cancer took her away, all I got was an enormous bill. That put a lot of stress on me. I thought I'd be paying it off until I died myself. That probably wouldn't have happened if Bain kept his promise and I was allowed to keep our health insurance. I know it wouldn't have happened if I still had my old job at the steel mill. It's upsetting what Mitt Romney and his partners did to us here in Kansas City. They came in, they bought the plant, and they made as much money off it as they could. Once there wasn't any more money they thought they could make, they closed it down and filed for bankruptcy, with no concern for the folks who worked there. When you look at what Mitt Romney did at places like GST Steel, you can tell he's only worried about one group of people, and that's the people like him, people at the top. You can't expect much more from someone who says he likes to fire people with no concern about what their family really means. Now I'll turn the call back over to Stephanie.
Great. Thank you, Joe. We really appreciate you and David sharing your experiences.
Stephanie Cutter, say thank you, Joe. Yeah.
When you told me this, okay, well, when we got up this morning and you, you know, read this story to me, whatever, I was, you know, flabbergasted. And as the day has gone on and as the news has progressed all day, I can't believe it. I can't believe it.
Blatant.
I'm so blatant. Like, they just straight up lying. Just straight up. And nobody cares. The liberals don't care.
It's worse than that. It's like no media coverage whatsoever. Everyone's talking
and the
about
and those people that are Republicans for us, the people, the community, you know, us as Americans, that see what's really happening, we need to be overwhelmingly contacting these news organizations and saying, hey, we're not going to let this go. Like, this is something that it's just as blatant as it is, among so many other things as well, but this is absolutely horrifying that the Obama campaign would go to these lengths, and no one's holding them accountable. Like, it doesn't matter that they're lying. And black people, it doesn't matter that your black president said he's not the president of black America. So basically, he don't give a damn about you because you ain't giving him no damn money anyway. Then they, you know, want to go and call Mitt Romney a murderer. Then, you know, he's a bully. He's a murderer. He doesn't care about everyday common people. You think Barack Obama gives a damn about everyday common people? He ain't no everyday common person.
This is good.
And neither is Jay Carney or anybody else on that staff, for that matter, because I know what they're making. These jokers are paying a calligrapher. A calligrapher.
Well, they've always had one.
$90-something thousand a year, and they got more than one calligrapher on staff.
I'll admit,
okay?
That is the fleecing of the American taxpayer. But look at this.
This was FoxNews.com's cover story, and they've got the picture from the Obama-Biden website. It's got Joe Sopcich on it, and it's got the same quote. When you look at what Mitt Romney did in places like GST Steel, you can tell he's only worried about one group of people, mm-hmm. and that's people like him, people at the top. So they knew this.
Okay, first of all, let me say this. Do you think that anybody in any company thinks about anybody other than the people on the top? Do you think that they're like the president and the CEO of the company that I work for, which we have, you know, probably 42 locations, I want to say.
Right.
And, you know, we have over 1,000 people on staff, you know. But if business started to go, when I first started working for this company, actually, I've been there 3 years. And when I first started work, it's August 16th, it'll be 3 years. When I started working for this company, they hired me in August of 2009, their busy season, back to school, okay. They hired me, and I excelled in everything that they every task that they put in my hands. I excelled. And not only did I excel, but I was increasing, by me excelling in the tasks that they gave me, I was actually increasing their revenue, okay? I was making them an additional, by me being there, I was making them an additional almost $100,000 a year. An additional $100,000 a year just on my own, okay? Now, in October, some 2 months later, I get a phone call from our HR specialist, and she says, Mary, I'm so sorry, but business isn't really doing that great right now, and we have to lay you off. It has nothing to do with your quality of performance, nothing to do with you personally. We would love to be able to keep you on. We think you're great. And I'm going to do my best that I can. I'm going to keep you on my list. And if we lose anybody or whatever, you will be one of the first people that we call. And I said, you know, and I was getting up, getting ready for work. It's not like I got, you know, like I knew prior to. I was getting ready, getting dressed, getting ready to walk out the door and get in my car and go to work. And I get laid off. Do you think that the president and the CEO of the company were thinking about my rent having to be paid and my car insurance having to be paid and my health insurance that I had just gotten because it had only been 2 months since I had been there?
But
man, hell
there's
no.
There's a reason for that. When people like Joe Sopcich, what he fails to realize, as many people fail to realize, is that they believe that a company's obligation is to give people a job. That if you create a business that their priority number one is to get people a job. You build a business, you got to give jobs to people. That's not the priority. The first priority, the number one priority in any company, is profit. And you have people like Joe Sopcich who are trying to tell the rest of the country that that's not the way it should be. But you know what? No one would build a business if it was about employing people. It's got to be about profit so that the company can grow, so we can grow its profits, so that it can continue to grow people. I mean, that's literally at the bottom of the list.
And would this guy have rather them said, okay, listen, we can't really afford to keep this steel mill open and continue to offer you all health insurance.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to take the health insurance benefits away, or you can pay for them out of pocket and, you know, we're not going to pay anything into it and you can keep your jobs. Or we're going to take the health insurance away and you can keep your jobs because we can't afford to pay into it for you guys anymore, but you can still keep your jobs. That way we can keep the steel mill open. Would it still have been Romney's fault if you would have still had a job, but they just couldn't afford to give you health insurance?
Well, see, that's another thing. If you listen to the conference call, you hear what he says. He never, ever said that the health insurance killed his wife. In fact, if you listen to that conference call again, and I'll play that portion of it. He says that he was left with a bill. His wife had to go to a county hospital. He doesn't say she didn't get treated. In fact.
Well, and really, what is a county hospital? So what? A county hospital? Are you saying that county hospitals don't give good care. So basically, it's the county's hospital's fault, because regardless whether you're a private or county hospital, you should still be getting the same care that you would anywhere else.
Exactly, but I'm still not understanding how his wife, not telling him that he was sick, then finally going to the hospital 5 years after, four years after he's laid off. What, his wife going to a hospital 4 years later, finding out she has stage 4 cancer and then dying 22 days later, has anything to do with insurance? Because he never states that. He says when she died, after she passed, he was sent with a whole bunch of bills that he thought he'd never be able to pay. So
yeah.
The argument to me is, which is it, buddy? Are you saying that because of Mitt Romney, you didn't have insurance to pay these bills? Or is Mitt Romney responsible for your wife's death? Because I hear two separate stories.
Oh, I hear a few separate stories.
So that's the
and
part.
And they're all lies. Because nobody ever mentions that his wife had a job where she had health insurance. She had health insurance for herself.
Well,
all he says is, I got, and then he says that he got a job as a janitor, and he could only afford to pay for the health insurance for himself.
Right.
He couldn't afford to put her on. Well, your ass should have got a second job so that you could have paid for your wife's health insurance if it was so damn important.
And it wasn't, again, it wasn't
important.
But it
wasn't important at the time.
Because he never knew that his wife had cancer or developed it. She never told. So he is literally
but
trying
to... But preventative care should always be more important. Being proactive should always be more important than being reactive.
Not when it comes to Joe Sopcich, because anything that happens after something that... In essence... He can attribute anything in the past that happened to him to anybody he wants to.
Yeah.
Because he can just blame anybody he wants to. He can say the reason why he got into a car accident is because he missed the light two blocks ago.
And why is this moron, Stephanie, just flat out lying? I don't know
situation. No one knew until it was investigated, until people started investigating
it. Well, don't these stupid liberals know that we're not liberals? We're Republicans. That's why we're investigating your ish that you keep spewing. That's why you have all these other liberals that don't investigate you. Don't think that
they
we're just like those idiots and we're not going to investigate and vet your behind, because we are.
Yeah, it's sad. But trust me, there's more.
I knew there was a reason that you came into my life. Just so that Barack Obama would not get my vote again. I won't be duped this time, my man.
Saving the slaves one at a time. It's Reese on the Radio right here on blogtalkradio.com. Hey, what's up, guys? It's Reese on the Radio, and you'd be stunned at some of the people who call up to spend some time with Reese on the Radio. He is the godfather of entertainment, Mr. Michael Lohan. Mr. Lohan!
Reese, I have to stop laughing before we continue. I don't know how to respond to this. Am I in the Twilight Zone?
you are in the Twilight Zone. On the phone with us right now on Reese on the Radio is the connoisseur of the Hollywood biz, the father of the famed actress Lindsay Lohan. Mr. Michael Lohan is on the show on Reese on the Radio. Thank you for joining us today, sir.
No, thanks for having me, Reese. It's going to be a lot of fun, I can tell already.
Oh, man, you have no idea how much fun we are going to have today. It's Reese on the Radio, weeknights, right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Mary, Mary, why you bugging?
James, you're on the air?
Yep.
Before you say anything, you are just going to come clean right now, okay? I'd like to know the adult beverage you're enjoying.
Beverage? Yeah, I'm drinking beer.
What kind of beer are you drinking, James? Is it a 211?
Oh, yes.
You're drinking a 211?
Yes.
You're drinking 211
nice.
Steel Reserve.
Right now.
The reason why it's called Steel Reserve, and it's called 211 for that matter, is that the police code, 211, means robbery in progress.
And don't let me tell you what that 211 has stolen from you tonight, my man.
It's Reese on the Radio, weeknights, right here on blogtalkradio.com.
the Obama attack machine has started, spending millions to sling mud or oil at Mitt Romney. Why? Because in the five states where Obama is attacking Romney, gas prices have roughly doubled. But Obama's mud can't cover up his failed energy policies, policies that are hurting small businesses and working families. America deserves solutions, not attack ads covering up Obama's failures. 4 years of failed leadership are all we can afford. Send a message.
Hey guys, I'm Jordan Sparks.
I'm Chase Crawford.
Hey, what's up? It's Usher.
Hi, I'm Rachel Bilson.
I'm Hayden Christensen.
I'm Peyton Manning.
Hey, we're Fall Out Boy.
I'm Dan Archuleta.
I'm Corbin Blue.
I'm Kristen Bell.
And we're the Jonas Brothers.
And I promise you, none of these people listen to my show. But here's some people who do.
Hey, Reese.
Hi,
how you
doing?
I don't think you're a buffoon.
Thank you, dear. George, you're on with Reese.
Hi there, Reese.
Hello, George.
Please let me do the talking today.
George, you're going to be brief.
I respect what you said because you know something, you're being honest.
Hey, I'm glad that you're bringing up what's most important, and that is the issues and where people stand and what they have for experience.
It's Reese on the Radio, weekdays right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
This is the real state of our union. But you won't hear stories like those at President Obama's address tonight. The unemployed don't get tickets to sit next to the First Lady. Instead tonight, the President will do what he does best. He'll give a nice speech.
The idea of America endures.
A lot of memorable phrases in it.
That our future is hopeful.
But he won't give you the hard numbers.
Our journey goes forward, and the state of our union is strong.
Three years ago, we measured candidate Obama by his hopeful promises and his slogans. Today, President Obama has amassed an actual record of debt, decline, and disappointment. I'd use the State of the Union to lay out an agenda that will get our country back on track and get our fiscal house in order. We need to nominate someone who is an experienced leader, who has the qualities of leadership, the character, the judgment, the seriousness, the sobriety, the capacity demonstrated time and time again as a leader to help guide our party at a critical time and make sure that we hold on to the House, that we capture the Senate, and that we get back the White House and restore to America what is rightfully ours. A great nation, united, free, and prosperous for our kids and for their kids. Thank you so very much.
There's Dr. Oz, there's Dr. Phil, there's Dr. Drew, there's Dr. Joy Brown. It seems like everybody's got an opinion, but I'm going to leave it to the real professionals. Call up at 347-308-8701 to give me your take. It's my problem, you deal with it. Right here on Therapy Thursdays on Reese on the Radio, on blogtalkradio.com, weeknights on blogtalkradio.com.
All over my face. What is a boy to do?
President Barack Obama named himself one of the country's four best presidents. Better than George Washington, John F. Kennedy, and even Ronald Reagan. But Mr. President was just being modest. He's in fact America's best president at piling on debt. So good that he has managed to pile on nearly as much debt as all the previous presidents combined. All he needed was just 4 years to outspend 220 years of history. We can't afford four more years of America's best president.
Warning, the sound you're about to hear can be devastating to your ear.
I love it, I love it, I love it, L-O-V-E.
You're listening to Reese on the Radio right here on blogtalkradio.com.
We're back.
29 minutes after the hour right here on blogtalkradio.com. It's Reese's on the radio. August the 8th, 2012. Now, you've already heard the audio, and I will play it again. But if you missed it, and you just joined us, what we're talking about, of course, is this this ad that Priorities USA put out, talking about this former steel worker, Joe Sopcich, who did this ad, pretty much connecting Mitt Romney, Governor Mitt Romney, with the cancer death of his wife in 2006 and associated Bain Capital. In the ad, he pretty much doesn't give a timeline, I guess for time constraint reasons. It's a 30-second ad or about 1-minute ad, whatever it is, and pretty much just gives out this timeline and just says, you know, look, Mitt Romney was with Bain Capital. Bain Capital fired us. My wife got cancer. She died 22 days later. You don't know any of the details, nor do they care at Priorities USA. The facts don't matter here. The facts are what it is that they claim they are. We say what the facts are. You believe them. And then people are forced to fact-check after the fact, but it's already done its damage. People hear that story, and they immediately go to, oh, man, that effed up Mitt Romney. And then when you finally hear the backstory, who plays the backstory? CNN, the least watched cable news channel in the country. I think that their primetime shows are at 20-year lows. I don't think that they're pulling in, I think their numbers are somewhere around 365,000 viewers at primetime. It's awful over there. And I feel bad because, you know, I have a dear friend that's over there. And I feel bad for him because, you know, I'm not saying that people are getting fired left and right, but there are going to be some changes. It's a complete mess over there. So no one saw it. And those who did probably are insignificant anyway if you're still watching CNN, for crying out loud. I had to find the audio online of the investigative report, but then everything else came out. Now, what's also interesting about this whole Bain Capital issue is that there are top bundlers for the Obama administration that are also involved in this whole deal. According to reports, it turns out that a gentleman by the name of Jonathan Levine, who is a top Obama bundler, who has raised some $100,000 to $200,000 for the Obama campaign, was in fact the man who was in charge of Bain Capital when JST Steel was closed down. So there is your culprit in the event that Joe Sopcich wants to blame someone. The person who was in charge of the day-to-day operations of Bain Capital is a top Obama bundler. So in essence, this is sort of like a double spy. What's the term that it was called? It's not a double spy. There's another term that they used. A double agent. That's what I'm looking for. A double agent in this case. Here's an Obama bundler who's obviously giving information to the Obama campaign. This guy's a Democrat, clearly doesn't like Romney, and is giving the Obama campaign information about Bain Capital, and is saying, hey, look, you know, we fired this guy. We fired all of these people. Let's attach it to Mitt Romney. Nobody knows who I am. I'm a nobody. I'll raise some money for you, and then we'll connect this with him. I'm the guy who fired him, okay? I'm the guy who did it. But it doesn't matter. Mitt Romney was there, and because he has an association, we'll blame him anyway. It's guilt by association. You know the rules in politics. All you have to do is be there. So it turns out that this Obama bundler, Jonathan Levine, and he's a current bundler, was actually in charge of Bain during that period when the layoffs occurred. So all of this BS turns out to be a farce. Now, as I mentioned, Joe Sopcich did a anti-Romney ad for the Obama administration, not the Super PAC. He did an ad for the Obama campaign in May. And if I'm lucky, yeah, here's the ad.
I was a steel worker for 30 years. When I first started working, I looked around. We had 5,500 employees. It was like a city inside of a city.
Steel would always be needed in the United States, so it sounded like a guaranteed job.
We were much more than just co-workers. We became very good friends.
We made parts for automotives. We made parts for nuclear plants. We made jail bars.
We had a reputation for quality products. It was something that was American-made, and we weren't rich, but I was able to put my daughter through college.
Having a good paying job that you can support and raise a family on is hugely important.
That stopped with the sale of the plant to Bain Capital.
Bain Capital was the majority owner. They hired the management. They picked the board of directors. They were responsible. Mitt Romney was deeply involved in the influence that he exercised over these companies.
It was like going to war every single day. They were starting to try to figure out ways to eliminate jobs, and so everyone had to pick up the slack.
We started having quality issues at that plant.
They weren't concerned about your health. It was like working in the sweat shops of the 30s.
Private equity is not per se bad, but what Bain Capital did was not capitalism, it was bad management. The decision makers were governed by a different set of rules than the rest of us play by.
Bain Capital was sucking money out of the company like there was no tomorrow.
The business model of loading a company up with debt in order to extract immediate profits for yourself out of it and then ensuring the failure of the company later on seemed like exactly the wrong thing that we needed in America today. They issued $125 million of bonds. And out of that $125 million debt, they paid themselves almost $40 million.
It was like a vampire. He came in and sucked the life out of us.
They made as much money off it as they could. And they closed it down. They filed for bankruptcy without any concern for the families or the communities.
Bain Capital went to the bankruptcy court and sought elimination of the pension plan and termination of employee and retiree life insurance and health insurance. And having to be the one that told them that they were not going to get health insurance anymore, telling them that their pensions were going to be reduced by 50 and 60% in many cases, those are among some of the most painful experiences of my life, standing in front of hundreds of people in their 50s and 60s, and many of the retired steelworkers came to those meetings, so there were people in their 70s and 80s as well.
I personally saw the last heat of steel go through the furnaces. It was like watching an old friend, you know, watching an old friend bleed to death.
Now, here's the interesting part about this ad. I want you to sit and watch both ads. The one that was put out by the Obama campaign and the one that was put out by the Super PAC Priorities USA. And I want you to look at Joe Sopcich and see if you know something, notice something eerily similar. Do you know what it is?
What is it? What's the question?
I said, I want you to look at both ads, the Obama campaign ad and the Priorities USA ad, and you will notice something eerily similar in both ads about Joe Sopcich. He's wearing the same shirt with the same background behind him.
Oh, so he did the same. Well, wait, he probably can't afford another shirt. Can't afford health care, can't afford to buy a shirt.
Here's the deal. Priorities USA clearly got the original video from the Obama campaign, which would immediately suggest coordination.
Well, obviously.
Which is against the law. As I expressed in the beginning, that a super PAC cannot be associated with the campaign in any way. They cannot coordinate. And the guy who is the chief strategist of Priorities USA is the former assistant press secretary of the Obama White House.
Boy, what?
That's right. His name is, I want to get his name right, but his last name is Burton. I think it's Ben Burton, who is the head of Priorities USA. He is the chief strategist for the super PAC, Priorities USA. And so if Burton got a copy of that tape of Joe Sopcich and it was given to him by the Obama campaign, that would be a direct coordination with the campaign in order to put out the Romney Killed My Wife ad. It's that simple, which is against the law. So hands look really, really dirty here.
Everything looks really, really dirty.
Really, really.
It's all full of ish.
Dirty. On the phone with us is Edward in Connecticut. Good evening, Edward.
How you doing, Reese?
What's up, guy?
Hey. I just caught on the show. I haven't been listening too long, but are you talking about the Romney?
Yes.
You know, this is so ridiculous. You know, I was having an argument with a couple of liberal friends of mine, and, you know, I even gave them a fact. I said, you know, let's say that Romney was at Bain Capital at the time. So what? It is his job to take these unprofitable companies and either make them profitable or get rid of them.
Right.
You know, you can't blame the man for doing his job.
But here's another interesting fact, Edward. No one seems to mention that in 1999 and in 2000, what was the one industry that plummeted like a hot rock in Cold War?
And what? I'm sorry, what was the year?
What was in 1999 to 2001? What was the one industry that plummeted like a hot rock in cold water?
The steel industry.
The steel industry. So the reason why the company went bankrupt is because steel companies were no longer profitable in the United States. And other countries, like China, were obviously producing steel at a cheaper price, and everybody in the steel industry was leaving. What about Pittsburgh? Look at that steel industry. You know, all of those areas like Ohio. This happened in Kansas City, Missouri. So you can imagine, this wasn't just because they sucked the company dry and took all the money. The steel industry was plummeting. And if you own a company, are you not supposed to make some sort of profit out of it and then completely dismantle it because it's no longer profitable? We're supposed to keep people in their jobs even though it's bleeding the company dry? Oh, let's just make sure everybody loses. Sometimes,
you know, even if what they were saying is true about Bain Capital sucking the money out of the steel company, there were people who were sucking the money out of the steel company long before, those union workers, with their fat Cadillac health care plans.
Who are you telling? And that's the interesting part. Joe Sopcich was a union worker. And you hear in that audio, the guy who said he had to fire all of those people, but you find out that their pensions got reduced to 50, 60%. Well, that was the reason why the company was bleeding dry, because these people's pensions were, I mean, he's saying he had to tell people who were 70 and 80 years old. These people weren't still working at the steel mill. These people who were getting paid off the steel mill for not working because they had these sweetheart pensions that were paying them to stay home and play bridge and bingo. And what is the company supposed to do? That's ridiculous. You know, it's absolutely disgusting that anybody would suggest, and that's the whole bottom line here, would suggest or try to make Mitt Romney out to be a murderer. First, he's a felon. I mean, they even went so far as to call him a felon. Now they're calling him a murderer. And then they're saying that he avoided paying his taxes for 10 years. Nothing is off limits. And this is a president who said that he was going to run a above-board campaign.
Yeah. A transparent one.
At that.
Yeah, you're transparent. We can see right through you.
You're absolutely right.
We can see right through all your ish.
You're absolutely right. It's sad, but, you know, again, I don't think that – first of all, I'm almost certain that that Priorities USA, this ad, is going to be pulled. I'm almost certain that it's going to be pulled because the backlash has been ridiculous. And once people start making the connection with Stephanie Cutter, once they start making the connection
– Yeah, but are they – liberals aren't going to do that, though.
No. We don't have – no. Trust me. It is going to be alternative media. It's going to be alternative journalists. It's going to be conservative journalists and bloggers. The same way they got rid of Dan Rather over at CBS News, same way they booted his ass out of there and got him fired, the same thing's going to happen here. It's not going to be stood for anymore. No one's going to take this line down. And I'm certain that there are going to be people whose heads are going to roll because Obama has to keep his hands clean. And once the filth starts to show up into his White House, this is it's really going to be a day of reckoning. Beyond a shadow of a doubt. Beyond a shadow of a doubt. This is absolutely going to be that's it. It's got to come to a head. I want to play one more piece because I'm almost certain I have it here. I just want to make sure that I did not I didn't screw this up. I think I got it. I should have it. Oh, good. Okay. I want to get into this. So just to add insult to injury on all of this, and to show you where there's nobody out there saying bottom line that that Obama is clearly got his hands dirty on this one. But I want to play this. I want to play this ad about Romney talking about Barack Obama gutting the welfare program that was placed under the Clinton administration. No, that's the wrong one. I figured that was going to happen. I knew that was going to happen. I said it, and it happened. It sure enough always happens to me. I told him, here it is. This is the ad. It has all of these liberals talking about welfare reform in 1996, and it's got Obama opposing welfare reform in 1996. And the press is all over this one.
The new bill restores America's basic bargain of providing opportunity and demanding in return responsibility. This bill will help people to go to work so they can stop drawing a welfare check and start drawing a paycheck. Why should an able-bodied person receiving welfare not be required to work? I believe it's an important change. Yes, people ought to work. Hardworking American citizens should not be required to carry people. I introduced a concept of welfare in 1986. I remember being pilloried by my colleagues on the Democratic side at the time for suggesting that there be mandatory work requirement for anyone receiving welfare. I wasn't quite wild. Federal plan was designed in 1996. I would not probably have supported the federal bill that was passed.
So there's Obama saying that he would not have supported the 1996 bill that was passed for welfare reform. But here you got Levin, and I'm forgetting Levin's first name. The audio you heard was Levin, then you heard what's his name? John Kerry. And then you hear Joe Biden talking about he tried to pass something similar in 1986. And he was chided by his Democratic friends for trying to have welfare reform. And, of course, you hear Bill Clinton in the beginning. All talking about welfare reform. And here's Barack Obama saying, when he was a state senator, that he would have not have voted for welfare reform. So they're just using his words against him. So then I heard this today. Chris Matthews on Hardball talking about the welfare ad.
Welcome back to Hardball. Welfare politics seems to conjure up memories of Bill Clinton's mid-90s reform of Reagan's tales of welfare queens. Remember how he talked about them? But it's back, thanks to a new misleading Romney campaign.
It sounds terrific. These ads are running. I was watching the Olympics today, and they're running during the Olympics. So this is their new...
No, this is Willie Horton stuff. Look at this. Not surprisingly, White House Press Secretary Jay Carney took to the podium today to correct the Romney ads as falsehoods. Well, the interesting thing, Sam and Nia, I'm going to get into this thing rather heartily here. The pictures of the wholesome family there concerned about welfare cheating are white people. And the implication here is pretty clear that the people that are getting these welfare checks without working are not white people. This is the old stuff that Romney's resorting to here. It's familiar territory. It's Willie Horton stuff. It's the same old stuff Reagan used to engage in, talking about welfare queens and young bucks waiting in line with their food stamps to get vodka. I lived through all that stuff. I know all the code. This is code.
And so now it's code.
Of course it is.
You talk about welfare, it's code. Now it's a racist ad. Racist ad. Barack Obama doesn't support welfare reform, and now Mitt Romney bringing it up is code. Somebody explain this to me. Somebody explain this to me on how it's... Now that gets outrage, but no outrage about the ad suggesting that Romney killed some poor man's wife.
And no outrage about the fact that they're lying.
Yeah, and getting caught in every lie. But here's where the bottom line is, Mary. It's very simple. Here's where the bottom line is. It's scary, but true. The media has its ego about itself, or its belief system about itself, that if we don't give you the news, you'll never know. If we don't report it, you'll never find out. You only get to know what we tell you. So if there is elitism within news media that says, look, we're not going to report that because we don't want the audience to know. We're going to keep them willfully ignorant.
But audience can know.
Well, no, that's true.
Because all they have to do is investigate, just like we know because you are such a great investigator.
But the bottom line is that there are people out there who don't bother to investigate, who are caught up in soliloquy, who are caught up in rhetoric, and get caught up in that same, the whole, they don't get caught up in the minutiae of things. They just hear sound bites. And the media knows that, and they take advantage of that. So when you hear people talking about this over and over again, they only hear what it is that they're being told. They don't even understand what it is they're being told. It harkens back to that video, and I'm going to find it during the break. It's that that Obama video that we played some 6 months ago, and where one of these independent filmmakers sat down with informed Obama voters and asked them who made these statements, who did this, who did that. They were asking them questions like, who said that they can see Russia from their house? And everyone answered Sarah Palin, Sarah Palin, Sarah Palin, Sarah Palin. MRC TV did another report like that and asked everybody in the crowd, who said I can see Russia from my house? Everybody said Sarah Palin, Sarah Palin, Sarah Palin. When they were playing the audio of Tina Fey saying it on Saturday Night Live, they were all embarrassed. Oh, wow. It was like, so you get the idea. It's like, and this only reason why the discussion came up is because an actual news company, Politico, actually quoted Sarah Palin as saying, I can see Russia from my house, even though they knew it was a Tina Fey line. Or they just completely forgot and got caught up in that whole rhetoric, you know, of that being repeated over and over again.
Well, no, but Sarah Palin did say that.
No, she never said that. She never said, I can see Russia from my house. All she did was say that if you actually look from our home, you can see the lights of Russia off the distance. But she was just talking about what you can see in the, you know, in the nighttime, and she was talking about the beauty of Alaska. She wasn't talking about foreign policy. She was just talking about what you can see, you know, how close they are to Russia and what you can see off the distance. That was then portrayed by Tina Fey saying, I can see Russia from my house. And it became Sarah Palin's line. So people aren't paying attention to that. They're paying attention to these sound bites that the news media plays over and over again. Because, of course, as soon as Tina Fey did it, and they saw her in that getup, they said, oh, look at Tina Fey doing the Sarah Palin impression. All the news media covered it. They all played it on their morning shows. Oh, it's so funny. Look how they're making fun of her. And then next thing you know, it's a part of the lexicon. So that's the way the media plays the game. We only want you to hear what we want to hear. We'll repeat it over and over again. And then there are people out there, when you're having a debate, somebody will turn around in an argument with you and say, well, you know Mitt Romney, he's a son of a bitch, man. What about that whose wife died? She got cancer, man, because he lost his job because Mitt Romney got rid of his company. That's going to be in there.
He was working at that steel mill. He probably took cancer home to his wife.
Strong possibility. But we're not going to say that.
Well, I did.
I heard you.
I can say whatever I want to say.
Yes, you can.
You going to vet me?
No, you can say whatever it is you want to say. Hey, look.
Do you think the liberals are going to investigate what I have to say?
Of course they are.
No, they're not.
Sure they are.
No, they're not.
The fact, listen, if you do not stump for this president, you're going to be investigated. If you've got any means or any communication.
No. You're going, if you don't stump for this president, you're not going to be investigated.
Sure you are.
You are going to be lied on. That's you're going
to
be lied on because there's
true.
No investigation going
true.
On.
Look what they did to Joe
because
Trump.
If they were investigating, they would have known better than to put this ish out on air.
No, but they didn't care. I mean, that's the whole idea. It's not so much about investigation.
Well, do they think the liberals are so stupid?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
You listen to me. The bottom line is that you ever heard, you know, it's the whole Lenin thing. You know, it's useful idiots. You know, that's all liberals see their constituents as, useful idiots. You know, when you start telling people that Republicans want dirty air and dirty water, how does that make sense? You know, how does that make sense anywhere? You know, we have to drink the same water. They almost treat us like we're aliens.
No, because Republicans are rich enough
to
you know, create their own water.
Yeah, obviously so. Obviously so.
I live paycheck to paycheck. I ain't rich.
Mike in Florida on the line. How you doing, Mike?
Hey, man, pretty good. But, yeah, I have to say that, sure, they are watching what you say, Mary. Anybody, especially you guys have a radio presence, and you've made yourselves known in the world as not supporting President Obama. There's an FBI agent listening to your show right now.
Absolutely.
No,
guaranteed.
Come on. That's conspiracy theory.
No,
they're not.
No, actually, I'll show you the report. The report is, in fact, there's a FBI whistleblower who just came out. He was on Drudge Report maybe a month ago, Mike. Was it a month ago? Maybe even earlier. Who came out and said that the FBI is pretty much trying to tap every human being in the country.
Mm-hmm.
Every human being in the country. And now they're also doing this thing with Twitter where they're trying. Oh, there are two great stories, in fact, that involve that. Twitter is actually
and Skype.
Twitter and Skype, they're trying to find out whether or not what your political affiliation is. That's one. And now there's an actual app that you can download right now that can tell you whether or not your neighbors are Republicans or Democrats.
Yeah, the Obama campaign put out one that's ostensibly to support them, and it will show you where all the Democrats are in your neighborhood.
Exactly. And this woman found out about it, and she's interviewed it in the piece, and she says, you know, look, I don't mind so much that people know that I'm a Democrat, but it makes me feel a little eerie that there are people out there putting the fact what my political affiliation is in my neighborhood. Because, you know, things are so polarizing now. Some people are worried. I mean, conservatives should be more worried than liberals are nowadays because, I mean, you know, it's rare that you hear conservatives, you know, beating the hell out of people because of their conservative views. AFL-CIO.
LGBT.
You know, those people beating down a black man at a Tea Party convention because he's supporting, because he doesn't support Obama, calling him nigger while they're kicking him. So, again, that's a very eerie thing. So, in essence, the Obama campaign will be out there pointing out who's who.
But they're lying about everything.
But that's the whole idea.
Everything. They're just a bunch of liars. And you know I hate liars. I hate people that lie.
They just have to get it out there initially. That's all. That's the way the Chicago game works.
Exactly. It is. It's, you know, it is. It's Chicago gangster, criminal, crony politics. You know,
and they know that the average American has an attention span of about 30 seconds, so all you have to do is give them the first 30 seconds of BS, and they're not going to listen for the follow-up.
They never hear it. Exactly. They want to put everything in sound bites, and everything is a sound bite. Anyway, we'll go to the top of the hour. I got to talk about some celebrity news. Important that I do. Just because Randy Travis, what the hell is going on?
Oh, Lord.
What happened to my man Randy Travis? I have no idea what's going on with this guy. We'll be back in Streets on the Radio.
Summer camps, Camp Mohawk. There's a two-year waiting list, and every child has to be voted in. On top of all that, it costs $1,000 a week to go to Camp Mohawk. The question is it worth $1,000 a week?
It sure is. It's the best darn camp there is.
Well, are you connected with Camp Mohawk?
Well, I think so. I'm the program director.
Well, how do you justify $1,000 a week?
Well, we have some special programs. We're doing Shakespeare in the Round again this year, of course. Our political roundtable, Henry Kissinger, will appear. He's going to come out, spend a weekend with the kids, just rap with them.
That's amazing.
And the kids wanted animals, so this year each camper will stalk and kill his own bear in our private wildlife preserve.
Are you sure the children can hack that?
We'll see. But the real excitement, of course, is going to come at the end of the summer, during Sexual Awareness Week. We import 200 hookers from around the world, and each camper, armed with only a thermos of coffee and $2,000 cash, tries to visit as many countries as he can. And the winner, of course, is named King of Sexual Awareness Week and is allowed to rape and pillage the neighboring towns until camp ends.
That's incredible. What do you expect for $1,000 a week?
Hey, you have a good summer, too, huh?
Minutes after the hour, Bill Murray at the top of the hour on Greece on the Radio on August 8, 2012. It's important. I know I'm probably going to get crap for this, okay? I know that I'm going to get crap for this. Why am I even bringing this up, okay? But somebody explain to me what happened to Randy Travis.
What happened? I don't know
okay.
What happened.
According
he's
to
a country singer.
Yes,
country.
He's a country singer. In February, In February he was arrested. He was sitting in his car. He was apparently drunk, and you know, cops came over to his car, pulled him out of the car, talked to him. He was obviously intoxicated, completely out of his mind. He's had a career, so to speak.
He's had a very good career.
His career has been as of late. It's been here and there. He's had a couple of albums out that did that. Would par for the course.
Oh, God. Oh, God.
He looks like a mess now.
No, I'm looking at what the story says.
Yeah, anyway, country superstar Randy Travis walked naked into a convenience store to buy cigarettes, touching off a bizarre series of events that ended with him being charged with threatening to shoot a state trooper in North Texas. I don't know.
Naked?
Naked.
To buy some cigarettes.
Yeah.
In a convenience store.
I don't. No, I have no idea what is going on with this poor man. Now, I always get him confused sometimes. Not that I should, but every time I see him, I always think of Lyle Lovett. Who used to be married to what the hell is that woman's name again? Lyle Lovett. It's not important. Forget what I say. Anyway, according to the Grayson County Sheriff's Department, Travis was arrested Wednesday following a single car crash on Farm Market Road, 922 at Clover Road near Tioga. Sources told NBC5 that prior to the crash, a call was placed to 911 by a store clerk who reported Travis walked into a convenience store without any clothes, clothes on asking for cigarettes. When asked how he was going to pay for them, wow, they still bothered to ask, Travis left aggravated and empty-handed. A short time later, a second call was received by 911 saying a man was found lying in a roadway on FM 922 near Clover Road. State troopers responded to the 911 calls, arrived at the scene, and found Travis, who refused a blood and breath test with a strong odor of alcohol in his breath and several other signs of intoxication. The trooper that arrested Travis placed him into custody on suspicion of driving while intoxicated, a Class B misdemeanor. You serious? Wow. During the arrest, police said Travis threatened to shoot and kill troopers working the case. Consequently, Travis was also arrested on a charge of retaliation, a third-degree felony punishable by 10 years in prison, and a $10,000 fine, according to the Griffin County District Attorney Joseph Brown. A search warrant was granted by a judge for a blood specimen, which was later taken at a local hospital. Travis was booked into Grayson County Jail just before 5 a.m. Brown added that Travis's February arrest for public intoxication was taken into consideration when the case goes to trial before the court. I mean, obviously he's got an alcohol problem.
He's got more than an alcohol problem. You were probably doing more than drinking to walk naked into a convenience store and asking for some cigarettes.
Well, look.
Very you nailed it. That's very crack behavior.
You think it's crack.
I don't think
That's
it's crack.
Out of behavior.
I don't think it's crack. I think it's probably meth.
Let me let the guys in. Well, okay, crystal meth or something along those lines.
Was he itching? Did they say he was? Was he scratching himself?
That wasn't reported. But lying. I can't say. What do we know? The characteristics of a meth head or somebody using methamphetamine? Would somebody be lying on the road?
Yes, they would.
Yeah. Maybe he's doing bath salts.
Okay.
Did he try to eat anybody?
Reasonable, plausible, very plausible.
But a meth addict, my next door neighbor, I lived in an apartment building. There was only, above a salon, there was only three apartments up there. And my next door neighbor, I think, I'm pretty sure that him and his brother and their friends at one point were cooking meth in the apartment because
that's
I
dangerous.
Can smell it.
Wow, that's dangerous.
And it's very dangerous. Wow. And I had to report him because you're not going to kill me.
Doesn't it? But I'm saying, couldn't this just be a simple case of alcoholism, guys?
No. Alcoholics don't do stuff like that. Drug addicts do stuff like that.
And if it is
weren't
alcohol,
smoking no weed.
And if it is alcohol, how dare they continue to keep alcohol illegal and don't want to legalize weed?
Well, if it gets a reaction like this, I think it might have to be considered. Come on, Mike, you don't know anything about meth?
Oh, dude, I think he's just a drunk. I mean, he was busted earlier this year or something for being drunk in front of the church.
Yeah.
My dad was a drunk. No. My dad, God rest his soul, he was a drunk. He never got butt naked and walked into a 7-Eleven.
Dude, you know, I got drunk when I was 21 and ran naked across a snow-covered parade field.
Yeah,
hey, listen, Randy Travis hasn't seen 21 since 1921.
That's at 21.
He's
we're
just a drunk redneck,
Randy man. Travis. We're talking about Randy Travis, which is like 80.
No,
yeah,
he's only,
he hasn't seen 21 since 1921.
I know he's
50.
I'm
you know, he's getting over some bad divorce with his ex-wife, and he's suing her or something because she was talking crap about his...
I'm going to go with Mike on this one. Because, see...
Well, it's kind of hard to say alcohol is not a factor when they find him naked and stinking of alcohol in the street.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Well, I'm sure you probably taste the cocaine with alcohol. You mess with alcohol.
Dude, you
gotta
know that he was a gospel singer since like 1999.
Yeah, but listen, even Whitney Houston, I mean, she cracked her plates and her teeth a couple of times, left them in bathrooms over and over, but she never walked out naked. Come on.
Yeah, I think the guy's an alcoholic. I think the guy's an alcoholic, but they probably, had something else with it. So if they get some toxicology reports, I'm sure that something's going to show up.
They do freak out when they get the DTs.
Well, wait, listen to this. I'm just thinking, maybe he's drinking something a little harsher than just what we would consider typical alcohol.
What is he drinking?
Like moonshine?
Yeah, like moonshine.
He, He's from North Carolina, for God's sake.
Yeah. He's from North Carolina. He's living in Texas. He's got some hooch. You know what I mean? He's probably got that corn liquor, you know, in a milk carton.
That is just...
You guys ever drink...
It would eat the milk carton. It would keep the milk carton away. You can't.
Y'all ever drink Wild Turkey?
Yeah!
No, forget Wild Turkey. I've had moonshine, and that ish is no joke.
No,
never
of course
again.
It's no joke. It gave me a minor heart attack when I was 26. I should know.
Maybe he's drinking that Jamaican 151 overproof.
I had that too. Set it on fire.
Yeah, this guy's got to be, he's got to be crazy rich. He has sold a lot of records.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's what I'm saying. His career has been teetering off a bit, but the guy will drop an album next year, and it'll be big as all hell.
He has 6 Grammys, 6 CMAs, 9 ACMs, 10 AMAs, 7 Dove Awards, and a star on the Walk of Fame.
Yeah, come on. This guy
25 million records.
Yeah, exactly. This guy, and again, an icon in country music in that whole genre. Every time you see the guy, he's a legend in his field. So I think this is, you know, the reason why I said the whole moonshine, the corn liquor, and all that other stuff. This is a divorce thing. If he's going through a divorce and a whole lawsuit and all that other stuff, this is probably depressing the hell out of him.
Yeah, at least he didn't actually shoot anybody.
Hey, yeah, there you go. But you know what? When you're in a divorce like that, it's all that self-destructive behavior. That's all that stuff is. You know, you do that wild stuff. You do self-destructive stuff. You're down on yourself. You kind of think of yourself as a failure. You're angry at everybody. Your wife's a piece of garbage. That slut, she left me. She never cared about me.
Why isn't he mailing cheerleaders? He's a 53-year-old multimillionaire.
Exactly.
He nailing Dallas Cowboy cheerleaders.
He drowned his sorrows in vagina.
Wait a minute. The weak should never get married then, because if I'm going through a divorce, I'm not running through the convenience store talking about, can I get some cigarettes?
Butt naked.
Take some change out of my ass.
That's my favorite part, is that the convenience store clerk says that he walked out frustrated when the guy asked him, how do you expect to pay?
I never forbid you to. If I marry in a diaper, curled up in a corner at a Starbucks.
Can't you imagine poor Apu? Like, oh, my friend, what are you going to pay me with?
Poor guy.
Get out of my door, naked man.
Give me cigarettes, Hapu.
Come on, man.
Get your Slim Menthol Light 100s in the box, Hapu.
Come on.
I'm betting, if anything, they're a Marlboro Reds.
Probably are. Yeah, listen, you're talking Randy Travis. They're definitely Marlboro Reds.
Nah, that's Garth Brooks' Marlboro Red.
Garth Brooks is too much of a wuss to smoke.
Yeah, Garth Brooks is pretty clean cut.
Yeah. No one cares.
Did y'all ever hear the story about when George Jones was at the worst of his drinking?
No, really?
Yes, George had been he was a real hardcore alcoholic, and something happened, like he got busted drinking, and his wife hid all the car keys, so he couldn't drive. Now, he's a multimillionaire at the time. George wants a drink. He can't find the keys to his cars. So he hops on his riding lawnmower.
Yes.
He drove his riding lawnmower like 4 miles to the liquor store.
Please tell me he was pulled over.
Oh, he was pulled over. for DUI on the lawnmower.
Which is my favorite. The fact that you can get a DUI on a lawnmower. There was another story I read the other day. I think it was, I can't remember where it was, but a guy got a DUI for riding in his own boat.
He was floating down the river on a raft or something in Alaska.
And he got a DUI. It's not even a motorboat. It's a freaking floating boat. And he gets a DUI for it. I love it.
You can get a DUI on a horse, my friend. Which seems kind of bogus, because the horse is not going to do anything stupid. The horse is kind of 50% in control.
Yeah,
exactly. Unless the horse is drunk, I don't see how that washes.
Yeah, it absolutely makes no sense. Okay, the other entertainment news I wanted to get into. Let me apologize formally to Janet Jackson. Janet Jackson, I called you all types of names behind this whole Jackson family feud. Okay? I called you all types of names. I said this girl, she kidnapped her mama along with Rebe Tito and all the rest of them, trying to get a hold of Paris Jackson and the money and the rest of the kids. Let me formally apologize, Janet. Get your ass back to that house, and you grab Paris by the hair, and you correct this little girl. According to a tweet that was sent out, I guess, a day ago or today, Paris Jackson is determined to keep alive the legacy of her father, the late King of Pop, Michael Jackson. On Tuesday, I guess it was yesterday, the outspoken teen revealed her desire to get permanent body ink in memory of her dad. She tweets, quote, I kind of want to get an August 29 tattoo on my back. She said on Twitter yesterday. Now, Paris is 14 years old. And now this little heifer wants to get a tattoo on her back. Janet, please, get your ass back over to the compound and put a whooping on this moronic little girl. Get her ass in line. I have different views about Paris Jackson. I thought that she was going to be the second coming of Michael Jackson. She was going to be the force to be reckoned with. The paparazzi will love her. They will be taking pictures of her. She'll be a celebrity having not do nothing. She'll be the new Paris. But now it just turns out that this girl is going to be nothing more than Nicole Richie.
Yeah. Oh, she's reckless. She's very reckless on her tweets sometimes.
I think this girl is real reckless. I think that this girl might be trouble before she even gets started. She's 14 years old. I mean, can I say Tatum O'Neal, Drew Barrymore? Are we going to catch her at Roman Polanski's house sniffing cocaine, drinking champagne? I mean, come on.
Hey, Reese, remember I told you that their grandmother was getting tired of taking care of the little overprivileged, disgusting asses.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. From the sound of this girl, she's a maniac.
Yeah, she's something else.
Now, every time I turn around, this girl is all over Twitter.
You know what they need to do is get Joe Jackson up in there, straighten that out.
Somebody.
She's got 818,000 followers. She follows 190 people, but the tweets that she's put out is up to 8,000.
8,000 tweets?
Who could have that much to say?
Dude, I've had my Twitter account for a little over a year. I'm barely breaking 600.
She's a young teenage girl. What do you expect?
Well,
they tweet like crazy.
Say again?
They tweet like crazy. Teenage girls? Girls in general.
But I understand that. That I understand. Girls are on the phone and that whole bitch. But she understands that there's a degree of anonymity. You know, there's a degree of sort of privacy that she's got to have. She knows that these people are watching every move she makes. I mean, and you can say what you want, but who do you think is following Paris Jackson on Twitter? I mean, every one of the Star Magazine, In Touch people, they're all watching her.
Are you saying she's reckless because she wants to tattoo her father's birthday?
Come on, man. The 14-year-old girl talking about getting a tattoo on her back? Why is she even talking about that?
You should see how she dresses in some of her pictures.
Okay, wait a minute. Wait. I want all of you guys to get your ish together.
Yeah, please. Tell
because
me.
Because at 14, 14-year-old kids are not what they used to be when we were 14. Well, I was... Okay, I wasn't either. But for the most part... I mean, they're like 18, 19-year-olds now. They, you know, life is going so much faster. They have so much more access to all these things. And just life is different. At 14, we were probably thinking about, you know, I was thinking about boys. And
I'm sure she's thinking the same thing.
I'm thinking about boys and tattoos and Twitter
tattoos?
And Facebook and this. Hell, she probably thinking about getting pregnant, too.
Listen, there's nothing in the world worse than a girl between the ages of 13 and 16. They're hell.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, they're evil.
I agree with you there wholeheartedly.
And look at the extravagant lifestyle and the over-the-top lifestyle that her entire family and everyone involved live. Of course she's thinking about tattoos.
Yeah, I mean, she's surrounded by nothing but craziness and chaos, poor kid.
Apparently, she tweeted again. She says, according to a report, it says, Paris is age 14, is 4 years away from being old enough to legally get a tattoo without a guardian's consent. Explain the rationale behind her dream tat. She writes, laugh out loud, y'all are tripping, trying to tell me not to get the tat when you guys don't even know what it means. It's my dad's birthday. Get over it. Laughing my ass off.
Yeah.
So she wrote, y'all are tripping? Really?
Oh, you should hear some of the stuff that comes out of her mouth.
Tripping?
Yeah.
What type of ghetto lingo are they teaching her in the Jackson family?
They're talking all they lie.
Tripping?
Why do you think Michael got away from this? Well,
she said, y'all be tripping.
At least she didn't say straight tripping.
See you. Anyway. She said, you'll give your dad gray hairs if you get that tat. Remember, he's watching you. Yeah, like gray hairs matter at this point. He doesn't approve.
Yeah.
Wrote a Twitter user named Michael the Soul, and Maria MJ Lover agreed, writing, I hate to say that I love you more than anyone, but that's not a good idea. A tat? There are more ways to show how much you love him. So, I mean, it's the
like
Twitter.
What? Molest little children?
Oh, that's nasty. So, apparently, people are saying that she's obsessed with her dad. They say that she's probably a little more. She said, that, in fact, according to what people are saying, that Paris appears to be as obsessed about her father as other girls are about Justin Bieber and One Direction.
That's creepy.
That is creepy.
Well, maybe she was getting it too.
She's creepy.
Yeah, you know, I'm looking at a picture of her now with those light eyes and a weird smile. Yeah, she's like the what do they used to call the negative version of Dakota Fanning? to put that in perspective, she's like the carbon copy. But, like, I don't know if you ever, guys, you ever watched a show called Darkwing Duck, and his arch nemesis was a guy named Negaduck. He lived in the old, like, Bizarro world. She is like the Bizarro world Dakota Fanning. Just looking at her. Just something creepy about her. I'm scared to death. Janet, get your ass over there. I'm sorry. Janet's got to put this ass straight.
And I agree with Mike. That oldest kid doesn't like plastic surgeon.
You think it looks like a plastic surgeon? I think the older kid looks like the bodyguard.
No, only Dangle looks like Michael.
Only who?
Dangle.
Oh, I love it when you call him that. Dangle. You mean Blanket, right?
Yeah, like Blanket is better than Dangle, really.
You're right. He's the one that looks eerily similar to Michael, but he's also the weirder looking kid. Is he deaf?
He looks creepy. He looks like he reads Twilight and jerks off.
I wouldn't have gone there, but I'll go here. Tell me if this doesn't this kid look like he could grow up to be Michael Myers?
Yeah.
I think that this kid could possibly grow up and, like, you know, and something weird happens to him on Halloween night. You know, Mama Jackson doesn't take him out to go trick-or-treating. Next thing you know, random people are getting stabbed at the compound.
And he'll do it while wearing one sparkly glove.
Exactly.
For you, Dad?
This is for you, Daddy. And everyone's screaming, Blanket, no! Put down the knife! That would be the title of the film, Blanket. Jason, Mike Myers. You have Jason, you have Halloween, you have Freddy, now there's Blanket. And that's the thing. He sneaks up behind you and puts a blanket over your head. And then
it's the color of darkness.
He puts a blanket over you, and then
he runs up behind you, puts a blanket around your face and your neck, and then dangles you. from the balcony.
And stabs you, like, I don't know what happened there, officer. We've got 9 Jacksons on the floor with blankets around their heads with stab wounds. We've got 1 suspect. That poor kid. He's the one. You know what? You might be right. Paris may be a diversion. Blanket may be the one we should be fearing. Maybe he's the one. That's just me. I'm just wondering. Anybody want to hear an abortion doctor rip apart ugly black babies?
Yeah, I heard that one.
Oh. This story is classic. When we come back, stick around. It's Free Center Radio.
I'm Barack Obama, and I approve this message. 4 years ago, we made history. Now it's time to move forward and finish what we started together. We have to show the president we have his back.
We can't afford to spend the next 4 years going backwards. I'm running to make sure that by the end of the decade, more of our citizens hold a college degree than any other nation on earth. I refuse to pay for another millionaire's tax cut by kicking children off of Head Start programs, or asking students to pay more for college, or eliminating health insurance for millions of poor and elderly and disabled Americans on Medicaid.
Have the president's back and register to vote. Go to gottavote.org to register now. That's gottavote.org.
You know we've got your back.
Paid for by Obama for America.
Last time on Reese on the Radio.
Have you missed Reese on the Radio recently? Well, don't worry. You can always go to the archives of Reese on the Radio right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Anybody heard from LaToya on this one? Isn't she eerily absent?
And she's a big mouth in the family.
She is the big mouth. She's dropping loose change on the family. She's not into dimes. She likes quarters, half dollars. But that I find extremely odd that she's not around. She's got to get her act together. Get in here. I mean, I can't believe I'm actually saying this. LaToya, please come out and get this family in order. You're the only one left to do it. In all of this mayhem, you're the only person that seems normal here. And you're an extreme whack job. But through all of this, you're the only normal person throughout this whole thing, with the exception of the kids. Maybe not Blanket so much. But all of them, you look like the normal one.
It's Reese on the Radio weeknights right here on blogtalkradio.com.
If I don't recognize your name, you're a nobody. Look, I don't make this much beef about my broad getting into the house to cook me a meatloaf. But they're really excited about this guy going from one souffle to a big zucchini. I don't know what it is, but she can't stop yammering about this.
Was it Michael Simon?
That's him. That's the guy. Michael Simon. Never forget it. Okay, I'll always forget his name because he's a nobody. But anyway, Michael Simon, the bald-headed guy, right? That's him.
Right.
Okay, so yeah, he wears a lot of plaid.
Yeah, that's
him. Because he's dressed like the chef. Whatever.
He's an Iron Chef.
Yeah. Is he an Iron Chef?
Yeah, yes.
Is that significant?
Yeah, that's pretty big.
Is it a big deal in the foodie world?
Yeah, it is.
Really?
Yeah, it is. Pretty big.
Seriously?
Yeah, it is.
They can lick my balsamic vinegar.
Yeah.
It's Reese on the Radio weeknights right here on BlogTalkRadio.com.
We will not take a dime from Washington lobbyists or special interest types. They will not fund my party. They will not run our White House. We're going to change how Washington works.
This headline in today's New York Times sure seems at odds with that promise to put Washington on the side of the little guy, not the lobbyists.
A rather long list of names of people who are working on Obama's transition team or who have accepted jobs in his White House.
I'm in this race to tell the lobbyists in Washington that their days of setting the agenda are over. They will not work in my White House.
The administration has hired several lobbyists, the president of a lobbying firm that worked for General Motors and Fannie Mae.
Sally Sussman leads Pfizer's powerful lobbying shop. She's organized events for the president, and she's also donated money for the president and bundled for him.
Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner appointed former top lobbyist for Goldman Sachs as his chief of staff. Appointed to the number two position at the Defense Department, a former top lobbyist.
Hundreds of meetings between Obama administration officials and lobbyists, and no official record of who.
The number of fundraisers for the president have also benefited hugely from the energy loan program.
Isn't the president opening himself up to just a charge of hypocrisy on this?
Just a litany of people who have raised so much money who are clearly lobbyists.
President Obama hasn't even made a token effort to keep his campaign promises of more openness and transparency. It was all just another lie that was told in order to get elected.
Stay right where you are. Don't go anywhere. Reese on the Radio returns in a moment right here on blogtalkradio.com.
The Obama attack machine has started, spending millions to sling mud or oil at Mitt Romney. Why? Because in the five states where Obama is attacking Romney, gas prices have roughly doubled. But Obama's mud can't cover up his failed energy policies, policies that are hurting small businesses and working families. America deserves solutions, not attack ads covering up Obama's failures. 4 years of failed leadership or all we can afford. Send a message.
Hey guys, I'm Jordan Sparks.
I'm Chase Crawford.
Hey, what's up? It's Usher.
Hi, I'm Rachel Bilson.
I'm Hayden Christensen.
I'm Peyton Manning.
Hey, we're Fall Out Boy.
I'm Jared Archuleta.
I'm Corbin Blue.
I'm Kristen Bell.
And we're the Jonas Brothers.
And I promise you, none of these people listen to my show. But here's some people who do.
Hey, Reese.
Hi, how
you doing? I don't think you're a buffoon.
Thank you, dear. George, you're on with Reese.
Hi there, Reese.
Hello, George.
Please let me do the talking today.
George, you're going to be brief.
I respect what you said, because you know something, you're being honest.
I'm glad that you're bringing up what's most important, and that is the issues and where people stand and what they have for experience.
It's Reese on the Radio, weekdays right here on blogtalkradio.com.
On the Radio, 32 minutes after the hour, right here on blogtalkradio.com. And if the feds are listening,
I don't like him, your president. I don't like him.
Anyway, and that's only because he sucks, personally. Anyway, as I said, 32 minutes after the hour. So, whenever you catch an abortion doctor telling the truth, I get scared, because it means so much. It means so much. Now, when the abortion doctor is one of those guys,
okay, open your legs, okay, we're going to suck out the fetus.
When he's that guy, I kind of get the impression, now it may, don't get me wrong here, maybe I'm wrong, maybe I'm right. But see, when I look at these guys who come from India or Pakistan and whatnot, they become doctors, I always get the impression that these people are very, very docile and kind and sweet. They appear to me to be very nice people. They do. I've got no issue with them. Especially when they become doctors in this country. For some odd reason, I think their bedside manner is very comforting. And I've seen a couple of them with my mom, seen a couple of them with other relatives, and I always thought that they're very engaging, some of them very witty and funny. So then when you hear something like this, you get a little weirded out. Because I don't even know how to put it. But anyway, apparently the guy's name is Ron Vermani, and he's an abortion doctor in Charlotte, North Carolina. He's arguing with the members of Operation Save America in defense of abortion because I, as a taxpayer, don't wish to pay for the baby with my money. This is what he says in a quote. Members of the OSA stated, we do wish to pay for these babies. So Vermonti is saying, go ahead and pay for them. Let me see you adopt one of your, and let me just let you hear yourself what it is that he says. The OSA is saying they want to adopt the babies, but, you know, they're confronting him about killing children. And this is how he responded. And adopt those ugly black babies.
Let me see you do it. Oh. Take one of those ugly black babies to your home. Your family will never speak to you again.
And he's saying that he's killing babies because he doesn't want to pay for them. Listen to him say that.
I
don't want to pay for them.
Don't put it on the taxpayer, okay? I don't wish to pay for the babies.
I didn't even get that part. He said the babies grow up and kill those people in Colorado. In essence, he's saying James Holmes should have been aborted.
No, I'm not profiting. I, as a taxpayer, do not wish to pay for those babies to be born and brought up and kill those people in Colorado. Go ahead and pay for them. Let me see you adopt one of those. I'll be glad, baby. Don't worry. You tell us. Yeah, go ahead. Adopt those babies. Okay? Take them off the taxpayer's money. Okay? Give us a chance to adopt. Those ugly black babies.
I'm stunned. I'm sorry.
They're some of the nastiest people on the planet.
Okay, I knew somebody was going to educate me about this. You think they're nasty?
I dealt with them as cab drivers.
Wait. Okay, I understand. Cab drivers, that's a different scenario. A lot of those guys get robbed, and you know they're robbed by a lot of, you know.
No. They only work, well, I don't know in New York City they may get robbed, but here in Connecticut, most of them only work at the airport. They don't drive around in the cities in different towns.
Okay.
Yeah, they work at the airport because they know 9 times out of 10 they're going to make good money working the airport. It's a business, dude. What do you want them to do?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm going to pick you up if you're in a 3-piece suit. I'm not going to pick you up if your pants are hanging down to your ankles and you got on, you know, those...
They still have nasty, crappy attitudes.
Ankle bracelets.
Yeah, but, okay, this still does not justify, dude. You take care of the ugly black babies.
And that's just it. They're very prejudiced, too. They are prejudiced and racist.
He justifies that. I mean, that was wrong. He shouldn't have said that, you know. There's plenty of ugly babies, not just black babies, okay?
But plenty of ugly babies. But the scary part is that he's saying that he hasn't even seen these babies. They're being aborted, and he's calling them ugly before they're even born.
And let me
now that brief. I think that what he was saying was that they'll grow up to kill more people than the Colorado shooting.
Well, no, he
said. No. But okay, this is the thing. If you're, and then you know, these people want to, you know, they want to adopt the babies. Give them a chance to adopt the babies. Listen, I'm not. I'm not pro-abortion, okay? I'm not. I don't think that you should use it as
a means
of birth control. It's not, if I got raped and I would want to have the right to go and have an abortion because I don't think that I can handle that, and it would be a very selfish act. That I can handle the selfish act versus something else. But
we know a girl who had a baby after she was raped.
But yeah, okay, I know that.
Okay.
Right. But and that may have worked for her, but for me,
I understand. I'm just saying.
Okay. Or you know, if I was molested or something like that, and ended up getting pregnant. No, I mean, I wouldn't want to do that. So, but those are selfish reasons, and I recognize that. But if you have all these people that are going out and adopting kids or being foster parents, and where do you think that money is coming from? The taxpayers. Those people are being funded, taxpayers' money, to become foster parents. So that is a lucrative business, just like the abortion businesses. They're
it
both
sure
lucrative.
Is.
I agree with you there. But wait a minute.
Hold on one sec.
Go ahead, Derek.
So I guess you're saying, okay, there shouldn't be an incentive to adopt children? I guess everybody should grow up in the orphanage like a orphan Annie or what's the name of the one that the boy that's like, can I have more soup? Come on, man. I guess that's better, huh?
No. I don't think that.
I want some more.
I don't think that Mary's suggesting that. This group OSA they want to have at least the opportunity to adopt these babies and not abort children. But what was scary about this abortion doctor, and he knows it's true, 35% of the abortions performed in the United States are on black babies. They only make up 12% of the population, but 35% of abortions are performed on blacks. Which in
so that means 65, that means 60-something are performed on white children, man.
Dude, white people
are taught more than anybody else, man, dude. That's a fact,
what,
man.
About Latinos? Did you forget about Latinos?
White people are the majority of their borders, dude.
No, I understand.
Yes, that may be true, but there's 13% of African Americans in this country, so he's saying that it's practically double.
How do they make up a third of the abortions? That's what I'm saying. It's only 12% of the population that's African American, but yet they make up over a third of the abortions in the country, Derek. That's an overwhelming amount. And we're talking about abortions since 1973 to today.
You know what? Let me tell you something, man.
It's over 10 million babies aborted. 35% of them are African American babies. That's a huge amount, dude. Huge amount.
Dude, Reese, let me tell you something, man. I gotta get a license to catch a damn fish. You shouldn't have to get a license to have a baby, okay? There's too many idiots out here to have a baby, all right? These women that are aborting their babies, trust me, they're doing us a favor, okay? There's too many idiots out here. Anybody can have a baby, all right? Trust me, they're doing us a favor. There's too many idiots. Come on. Yo, hold on.
So
Casey Anthony wanted to have an abortion, and her parents said no. Imagine if her parents said yes, we would have avoided all that BS last year. All right.
So
she wanted to have an abortion.
Do you agree
with
the doctor?
She wanted to have an abortion. She wanted to have an abortion.
But you don't think that she, as a white woman, wouldn't be able to get her baby adopted? A white woman? A white woman's got a better chance of getting
an abortion.
Listen.
She wanted to have an abortion.
A white woman has got a stronger chance of having her white child adopted than a black woman does. So she had options. Plus, she's in Florida. It's not like Kaylee, if that was the girl's name, if I remember
that
correctly.
It is.
Kaylee. It's not like Kaylee wouldn't have ended up in a good home. And if not, it's not like Casey couldn't have given their daughter. How many people do you know in this country who have a child and give it to the grandparent today? In fact, that's all over the black community. You got grandmothers taking care of their daughter's baby.
And they're taking care of their great-grandbaby.
Not only could she have...
people should not have children. They're too
stupid. Derek, let somebody else jump in. Let Edward jump in, Derek. Hold on. Go ahead, Edward.
A couple of things. Not only could Casey Anthony have given up her daughter for adoption and she could have found a good home, she could have also made a nice piece of pocket change doing it. You know, little white kids are worth a lot of money on the abortion on the abortion market. Not the abortion, the adoption market, rather.
The adoption market. You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. Especially the whole surrogate thing with these gay couples look for pregnant women who have nowhere to go, got pregnant, you know, by accident, whatever, and trying to offload their kids. I mean, there's an NBC show coming out this year called The New Normal that is exactly the same scenario. Girl gets pregnant and gives her baby up to a gay couple.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and
another thing I want to say.
There's nothing normal about that, okay?
Hold on.
I work with a lot of people from India and Pakistan. I do a lot of offshoring. And one thing about the culture is they do not have this political correctness that we have here in this country.
Sure.
You know, they say exactly what's on their mind, and if you don't like it, you know, so what? And I can hear that in this doctor's voice. You know, he's not coming from any political correctness, so I can't say this about black babies. You know, he's telling me exactly what he sees. This is exactly what it is. You know, if you want to adopt these black babies, which I know you're not going to do, you know, you're welcome to go to the nearest DCF and put your name in and adopt a black kid.
Yeah, but
they give you two for the price of one on that deal.
Yeah.
But see, the interesting part about this is that what this group is trying to do, and I give them some sort of credit for doing it, these guys want to stand outside. Operation Save America is the name of the group. What they wish to do is to stand outside or inside an abortion clinic and tell these girls, look, carry the baby to full term, and then we'll adopt them. They're telling this doctor, no. I'm not saying that it isn't, you know, look, I'm not saying that it isn't a stretch to even suggest it, okay? But they're saying they at least want the opportunity. Tell these girls, look, there's a group out there that wishes to adopt your child, and if you give them a chance to do it. But a lot of these girls, they don't want to be pregnant. They don't want to carry that baby to full term.
Hey,
well,
Reese, can I say something?
I'm sorry, Edward, go ahead and I'll let Mary go.
Yeah, just real quick, I want to let you guys know that me and my wife are foster parents, and Mike just said something as a joke that you can get two for one, but it's actually true. Not two for one, but seriously, you do get a higher stipend for adopting a black child in the state of Connecticut than you would if you adopt a white child. So
and
there is some truth behind that.
And you know what, Edward? That is nine times. I'm 99.9% sure that is the case in every state, every city. When you, if you're a minority, you get, you know.
Really?
Yes,
yeah.
Most
yeah. If you adopt a black child, there's more. Sorry to say it, but more money in it.
that's just the free market, dude.
But isn't that sort of like diversity, like companies get certain tax
yes,
breaks
it is
if
exactly
they hire
the
black
same.
People at their company?
It is exactly the same.
Really?
Oh, yes.
Well, it's a hard product to move. I mean, there's no market for that. Because black couples don't adopt, man. They really don't.
How many kids out there are out there, black, white, blue, green, Hispanic, doesn't matter. How many kids are out there that live such a horrible life that sometimes they sit back and say, damn, I wish my mother would have aborted me?
Oh,
yeah. Now, how many people in their 20s ask that question? You know? But, you know, a few years ago, Rosie O'Donnell made a big stink down here in Florida.
Okay.
Right? She threw a fit because Florida would not let gay couples adopt babies. And Rosie actually said, well, you know, there are so many minority babies that don't get adopted because, like you said, you know, it's kind of rough, but a white baby is the cream of the crop as far as what you want to adopt,
right?
So Rosie throws this big stink that, you know, gay couples should be allowed to adopt and they should adopt those little black babies. And I kind of agree with that, right? If the gays want to adopt, yeah, okay, those kids need homes. But who did Rosie adopt?
You
ever
see
Rosie's
kids? Black kids get raised by some bone smugglers, man. Come on, man.
Dude, it might be better.
But wait,
Derek. Maybe it's stretching out of a little savages.
But, Derek, again, that's a big argument. See, everyone's talking about how, you know, the ability for gay couples to be able to adopt. But if they're only going out, as Mike just, you know, clearly put, Rosie O'Donnell went out there and adopted a whole bunch of white kids. Not one black kid adopted. She said black kids should be adopted. People should adopt these black babies. She didn't adopt one. But the bottom line is that if gay people are allowed to adopt, if we give them that right to do that, and they start adopting these black kids, you know, again, this goes back to your earlier premise about, you know, kids living in these orphanages like Annie and Oliver Twist. You want to get them out of that situation. So, but, you know, of course, as Edward just says, look, it's, you know, it's a twofer if you adopt a black child. If there are more people out there who do that, who know that, are probably going to adopt black children, you know, then it solves both the problems.
And the sad part about that whole, if the child is a minority and it's a two for one, you know, you get a bigger stipend for that. How many people out there that are just adopting minority children just to make money off of it? They really don't care about the kids. They don't care about any. They don't. All they care about is the money that they're getting. The money, the SNAP program, the this, the that. They don't care about the kids, but they're adopting a bunch of little black kids that have nowhere else to go just for the money, and that's sad.
I'd like to adopt one and just raise him in the least black manner possible, just as like a social experiment. You know, let him listen to nothing but heavy metal and country music.
Yeah, then he comes to the hood and he's going to get his ass whipped. Man,
well, no, he's not going to go to the hood. He's going to live in the suburbs with daddy.
Never...
Man, what the hell? You talk, like I said, come on, man. What kind of black man is that, man?
I might get him a little jockey uniform, let him stand out in the front yard with a lantern a couple hours a day.
Dude, he's got to get his ass whipped, man. Got to get his ass whipped by the white kids, man, for not being black enough, man.
Mike is the cruelest son of a bitch in the world.
Hey, and there's one thing I want to say about this abortion doctor.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Why is it these days that people are always so pissed off at someone who takes pride in their work?
Like I said, man, there's too many idiots that shouldn't have children, man. You know what I'm saying? There is room to be space in this world for abortion doctors. I'm serious.
Instead of having abortions, they ought to fix all the people just like they do to cats and dogs. They ought to fix it.
Yeah, Derek, what about that? Remember that Republican state senator in Memphis, Tennessee, who wanted to pay women who were on welfare to get their tubes tied, and everybody went nuts? Remember
that's
that?
A fantastic idea.
They were going to pay people, I think it was like $1,000 to $2,000, for women who wanted to come in and get $2,000 to get their tubes tied so they wouldn't have children anymore. And they were only offering it to black women or people in the inner city. Or people who are on the welfare program or whatever, they were going to give. And now, even though the public at large was outraged, but the girls in the community, they were waiting for that check.
They were in line, like, where is my money?
And they
showed me the money.
They were.
$3,000 anyway, and they already had about four kids.
I wish somebody would pay me $2,000, $3,000 to get my tubes tied, because I do it, because I don't want to. I mean, I don't want to have kids anyway. So, where's my money?
You guys know who founded Planned Parenthood? Margaret Sanger. I have a quote for you from Margaret Sanger, okay? She says, "Negroes represent the great problem of the South. We should hire 3 or 4 colored ministers, preferably with social service backgrounds and with engaging personalities. The most successful educational approach to the Negro is through a religious appeal. We don't want the word to get out that we want to exterminate the Negro population, and the minister is the man who can straighten out that idea if it ever occurs to any of their more rebellious members."
That's right.
She was a eugenicist.
That's right.
She talked about getting rid of the poor stock and improving the race and wiping out black people. She spoke at Klan rallies.
That's right. She used the word undesirable. She spoke at Klan rallies to Klan members who were women, and she talked about undesirables in the country, and she specifically pointed out Jews, Latinos, and blacks that for population control and for ethnic control.
Yeah, the whole messed up part about that stupid argument this woman has? Do you know that right now in Europe they're talking about in the next 20 to 40 years they're not going to have enough people there to live there because white people are only having like one child per family in Europe? You had Pope John Paul begging white people in Italy to have children because they don't.
They can come over here and take all the illegitimate black babies they want.
Do you understand why the U.S. population is sustainable? And it's not because of black people in the inner cities. is because the Hispanics that you guys hate coming across the borders, they're the only ones still having big families, all right? Black people and white people here in America don't have big families like they used to anymore. And
because,
the numbers are not,
because of the advent of abortion.
If you cut off those people coming across the border, I'm serious. I mean, seriously, put up a big, huge fence and say, don't come here. I'm telling you, we're going to have the same problem that Europe was going to have inside of 40 years. There's not going to be enough people for the
Your premise is only saying that the only reason why that would happen in today's society is because of abortion. If we did block off the borders and that those 12 million people never got here in the first place, the only thing that would keep the population from growing is the advent of abortion. The ability for people to kill off their children, listen, the ability to kill off their children is what's destroying these minority families. Now, I'll admit, Latinos are the fewest of all the groups to abort their children because they have strong Christian values. They rarely abort their children. But African Americans, come on, man. That's an overwhelming group. And Planned Parenthood is all through the hood.
And like I said, you still have black people and not the majority of people that abort the children, man. You're talking about one third. What about the other two thirds, man?
You keep
sitting over here and making it seem like it's a black problem. Two-thirds, who are the other two-thirds? They're not black people, dude.
Go ahead, Edward.
Yeah, another wrong assumption you made was that Americans don't want people to come over here. We want to put up a big wall. That's not true. We don't want people to come here illegally. If you follow the rules, that's the problem.
Yeah, that's the only issue. And Derek, no, I'm not suggesting that the black abortion rate is the overall number. But I'm just saying what I'm saying here is that Planned Parenthood had a group that was formed by Margaret Sanger, a eugenicist who was supported Aryan values, who was a Hitler sympathizer, created this program in order to kill black and Latino and Jews, their children, from the start to control the population.
The ethnic population. The ethnic population, more white people than black or Latino. I understand where you're coming from,
but you know what? Her argument is stupid because of the simple fact there's more white people that use those abortion clinics than black people.
Let me show you another argument.
Hold on a second now. There's another argument. I remember that scene in The Godfather where you have all the mafia dance together, and you know that guy's over here like, you know, we want to control drugs, but we want to keep it with the colors. Let them lose their souls. Dude, more white kids buy drugs, man. Hell, we just saw when I went down to Penn State.
Your argument doesn't hold water because you forget that you're
more
being,
drugs than anybody, man.
Of course, Derek,
more
people and more white people use drugs. Dude, are you going to talk?
Yes.
You keep forgetting that it's all about proportion.
Right.
Proportion.
You totally ignore proportion.
Derek, that's an important factor here. It is proportion. We know that there are 212 million whites in the country, white non-Hispanics in the country. We know that. That is a fact. What you're missing is a key component here. Of course there are more whites doing more because proportion.
There's four times more white people in the country than there are black.
But again, with a population that small, you should not be double the number in abortion, is what I'm saying. It should not be 35% of the abortion rate in this country when you're only 12%. We're talking about 39 million African Americans in the country who make up for 35% of 10 million abortions.
But I'm telling y'all where the money's at. The money is not with the minorities, man. The money's with the majorities who are spending more money and putting out more people with the abortions. And like I said, the same thing with drugs. Like I was trying to say, Reese, you remember when I went to Penn State, man? Shoot, you know, when we hanging out with Lee and Dave, the two Jewish white guys, remember them?
Yeah.
All right. Now I went home with Lee and Dave one weekend, and you know I go to their neighborhood up there in Bucks County. You know they don't sell nickel and dime bags out there. They sell that weed by the quarter, dog. You know what I'm saying? They bought more. They spent more. So like I said, man, y'all sit over here and say, okay, yeah, proportion, okay, proportion of black people and Hispanic people that buy drugs, whatever, blah, blah, blah. The money's with the white kids, y'all. I don't care what you say. You know what I'm saying? That's who's buying them all the drugs, man.
Who
proportion
does
my ass, who got the money?
Okay, hey, Edward, go ahead, and I'll end it off. Go ahead, Edward.
Just remind me never to do anything illegal in front of Derek because he will go on the radio and tell all your business.
Yes.
Derek, I didn't say no last name.
You're dropping more than dimes here, my friend. There's a couple of half dollars you dropped right there. Well, nonetheless, as usual, guys, always a lively debate. That's why I love the show. And I love it. Yeah, let them know, JC. That's our show, folks. Again, as usual, it's always a pleasure. Don't forget to join us tomorrow. There'll be more news, I'm sure. We got plenty of stuff coming up. The week is almost over. I've still not heard any word from my lawyer yet. The minute that I do, I promise I will share it. Thank you guys, as always, for joining us. We'll see you tomorrow. Same bat time, same bat channel. It's Reese on the Radio right here on blogtalkradio.com.